Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
All right, we want to say good afternoon and welcome inside here, Mr. Jude Rogers. Good afternoon, sir.
It's a pleasure to be here with you guys again, Davy.
Yes, welcome back, sir. How's the weekend? Talk to me.
All right, well, the weekend was great. Got a chance to go out into the wild. I was able to hike from Maracas Valley over to Maracas Bay and back over, just about a 14-mile hike.
Yeah,
I
saw that.
I saw bushfires going on in the hills. So it had me very concerned. Thankfully, most of those were controlled, and it was basically a little bit of famine taking place. Not necessarily a wild bushfire being released and causing havoc in the northern range. You really don't want to have to go into the northern range as a firefighter and have to deal with a bushfire, because the uphill is brutal.
Really?
It's a serious thing when you head out into the natural environment that we have. And we have a really beautiful flora and fauna in Trinidad and Tobago. From that particular hike, there were so many beautiful things that I saw. There were even waterfalls that had really cool gushing water still there. So we do have, and that's one of the main things about bushfires that I want people to understand as well. On that northern range is all the water aquifers that hold the majority of the water. The water doesn't dry up during the rainy season, because that water really is groundwater. It's not surface water. So you'll still see water from the Maracas waterfall, you still see water from the different waterfalls on the northern range. So it's really a protected area and should always be protected for our water resources in this country as well.
So when it comes down, I mean, we had a continual discussion on bushfires and what it means, you know, the dangers of it in Trinidad and Tobago. We are still in the midst of our dry season. We are the heights of it. You can correct me if I'm wrong. You know, we needed to continue that conversation in helping people appreciate the dangers. Now, we might say, we can appreciate that something is dangerous, but you need to appreciate that it's dangerous in the first place before you can start to know what you can do to protect yourself from it. You know, so anything that you want to share with us as it relates to that?
Well, first and foremost, you sent me back to school, Davy. I have to tell you that you sent me back to school, because what I had to do, I went to the statistical department within the fire service, which is part of the fire prevention unit. We're the ones that would take that data on fire calls, and we would take a look at it, and we would look at it via division. So we have four divisions in the Trinidad and Tobago Fire Service. We've broken up Trinidad and Tobago into four regions: the northern region, the south region, central region, and Tobago. I wouldn't go into the geographical boundaries right now, but needless to say, I asked the statistician, a gentleman, a firefighter by the name of Kenroy Adams, to take a look at the figures and to give me some feedback as to what were the worst bushfire years within the last 5 years. And if we looked at the figures, we were dealing with a myriad of calls in 2019, 3,842 bushfire calls across Trinidad and Tobago. Let's do the math on that. If we were to divide that over a six-month period, let's say January to June, and we divided that figure by six, Davy, you would understand that we were looking at in excess of 300 calls monthly. And not only that, we would be looking at over 34 calls per day during the bushfire seasons on average. Now that kind of gives you the kind of a snapshot as to how much of a demand is going to have on the resources of the fire service to be able to respond to these calls. And I would say simultaneously, because you cannot respond to 34 calls at the same time. So even if you had 5 in the north and 10 in south and 2 in Tobago and 20 in central, you're still going to have a situation where you're not going to have enough appliances, or you may not have enough personnel to respond to all of the significant bushfire calls. So it's good to look at the statistics, and I'm just going to run some more by you. In 2020, we had a total of 3,674 bushfire calls that we responded to. And the reason why I'm saying responded to is I want to let you know that for every bushfire call that we respond, there is one that isn't that may not reach our help desk or reach our 990 number. And so it means that the true bushfire season is more of twice as much as what you're seeing, or even three times as much as what you're seeing being reported. So that tells us of the magnitude of the problem. In 2021, and there's something I want our listeners to know, you cannot take the bushfire season without looking at the weather pattern. So when we look at the bushfire season and we look at the severity, we also look at what were the weather patterns for that particular year. So 2019, 2020 was a drought year in Trinidad and Tobago. That's where we also saw the heavy flooding. You know, normally after a drought comes heavy flooding, and some people don't know. These things are patterns that we can look at. So after the heavy burning took place, Davey, we had that massive floodplain, that 100-year floodplain issue that would have occurred coming up somewhere around that period there as well. So between 2018 and 2020. And then we had 2021, where the calls dropped drastically to 1,087 calls for the year. And for 2022, 1,547 calls. Now, what happened in 2021, we had an abnormal dry season where we had a lot of rain during the dry season. I don't know if you remember that, but there was a year when we had a lot of rain. And even during the dry season, there was rain. That was 2021. And so for that reason, the weather pattern reflects or has a direct correlation with the reduction in bushfire calls. But the average bushfire calls per season, let's say if you look over a 20-year span, if we would notice that we average out at around 1,500 calls for that 6 or 7 month period. And so when you're thinking about bushfires and you average that out, again, that is still puts us at over 20 calls per day during that 6 month period. And that is a very, very telling figure. And it has an impact on our environment. And the impact is not felt today, Davey, but it's felt over a 10, 15, 20-year period as we continue to eradicate the vegetation and remove the topsoil and what holds the mountains and all of the flora and fauna and the hillsides together. That's when we begin to feel the effects of bushfires.
Now, I like the way you put it there, because a lot of persons don't understand that when these bushfires come and these vegetation burn, you talk about the flood, right? People mightn't understand the connection between the dry season when these fires rage wildly, uncontrolled, and it burned massive areas of lands on the hillsides. Can you speak to this?
Yeah, so again, what we need to understand is that nothing is in isolation. When we impact on one aspect of our environment, it has an equal or it has a reactive effect on another area in our environment. As I alluded to earlier on, when you have a bushfire in our forested areas and the topsoil is eradicated, or what the roots that hold the mountainsides together is eradicated, you have a soil erosion taking place. And our agriculturists and our persons who look at weather patterns, our meteorologists, our climatologists, and I must say thank you to persons in the Trinidad and Tobago Met Service because they have recognized that, and they've been going out and doing what I would say a number of seminars, educating other ministries and other members of the public who are ably impacted, because they would have invited the fire service and a number of other agencies to come and have a discussion about the weather patterns and the changes in the weather pattern.
Look, I have a call on the line for you, all kind of thing.
You have a?
I have a call on the line for you.
Well, by all means. By
all right,
all right.
Because
we will have an open discussion about this.
Well, all right. If you don't mind, you know, I don't want to cut you from your thought. Hello, good afternoon.
Hey, David. I'm hearing that Dr. Bals all over again. Give that one giant conservation of the forest. And exactly what my friend is talking about there is what you said many years ago. All of us fail to remember the good things. Secondly, the bushfire destroyed insects that are borers in the ground. the Lord is going to be pleased. Just a question.
All right. If we caught it.
Yeah, I basically heard him saying that yes, the bushfires it does have an impact on the environment and it does cause great havoc in our society. I want to also allude to the fact that the fire service, together with the Ministry of Agriculture, the Ministry of Rural Development, and other ministries, the ODPM, we have been putting on a campaign together where we recognize that if we work together, we could sensitize the public about the dangers. Now, the people who feel it the most, Davey, would be who? Who you think going to feel it the most? Farmers. They feel it the most.
And they're the ones that started.
Who live on the floodplain.
Who live on the floodplain,
yeah. Not necessarily. Now, let's look at it. Because at the end of the day, a farmer would want a sustainable living. So, yes, you may remove the top vegetation and you may plant. But then that farmer doesn't want that bushfire to come and burn down the existing plant. So it means that he too must be very circumspect with how he would remove vegetation, because if it gets away, it could burn down his very own plantation, and he doesn't want that, or she doesn't want that. So I'm not at the stage of laying blame, but I'm here at the stage of education so we can bring about awareness and bring about a change in behaviors.
You want to take another call as we go along?
Sure, sure. Let's take that.
Hello, good afternoon.
Dave, good afternoon.
What's up?
And to your co-host.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of hours back, we had a bushfire in Debe. I want to believe that fire started somewhere by the university.
Mm.
And it hit that whole area up to the opposite Debe Market. And the whole SS area main road. Some people lost their crop. And up to now, I wait more than an hour to leave Debe. I live in the Philippine area, and lot of fire truck, all of those ambulances going to the school, because the children get smoke out, the school had to dismiss early, and not a fire truck can attend to that fire up to this day. Thank you very much.
Right, so, I really want to, first of all, sympathize with the statement that you're making, because I understand what you're talking about. But before I even started this particular program and got into it, I gave the statistics of what the number of fires that we have. It's because people don't know. You sit from in your homes and you think that the fire services just have to respond to one bushfire cause. But the picture that I'm painting, based on the accurate statistics that I have before me, is that in 2019, we had 3,842 bushfires. And Debe falls in the Southern Division. The Southern Division alone had 1,591 bushfires. Now, Davey, you need to do the maths on that. That's over a six-month period. Divide that figure by six, and you will begin to see that it's over 30 to 40 calls that one division is dealing with on a daily basis. How can you take a fire truck from point A and attack 38 fires at the same time? Even if every single station had a fire truck, and even if you had two fire trucks, you still won't be able to respond to all the bushfires at the same time.
So true.
So these are some of the factors that we must bear in mind. And so, callers, one of the reasons why I'm on the program here with you, representing the fire service, representing the fire prevention department, is to bring that level of awareness that you will have to understand that in some cases, you need to draw the line to protect your own self. Because if there is an earthquake in Trinidad and Tobago, callers and also listeners, bear with me and understand I'm painting a picture of reality for you. I could come here and paint a picture where you feel everything is nice and dandy, but it's not. We have limited resources and we have a wide geographical area within which to cover. The fact of the matter is, if there's an earthquake in Trinidad and Tobago, it's going to have widespread effects on all our buildings and the fire service then has to prioritize which one of those fallen buildings or whatever situation, namely children, women and children, get first priority. You all know that, right?
Wow.
And the men have to fend for themselves, or the men have to be part of the rescue effort. Don't you agree with me, David?
I agree with
David,
you.
David, with me?
I'm with you. Right. I just listened to what you now say. They help prioritize who's important, who goes first.
And this is it. And this is what we have to do in the fire service all the time. We have to screen the calls, determine which one is affecting life first and foremost. and then allocate the resources accordingly. So I'll say this to the caller. In the case of the Debe University, I know where the university is located, and I know the area. Most of that vegetation in that area has no houses that is being affected, but it's going to have a widespread smoke fill. That smoke is going to affect a vast amount of persons.
Mm.
So you find that the fire service would have given priority to a bushfire that was leading up to somebody's home, a home for the aged, and I know the children would have been affected by the schools, and he's right. Mm. So there's no excuses, but there is a reality of how we have to prioritize.
Wow.
And I'm certain that the Southern Division would have been dealing with other bushfires in other areas.
All right,
while this one is going on in the
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, David. Good afternoon to your dear fire officer there.
Yes, Officer Ryan.
Right, my heart goes to them because they have a lot of work with lack of equipment, et cetera, as we know as the years go by. What I can't find them to understand, why at this present day and age, on a daily basis, we have two fire trucks in central here delivering water to the Freeport station, to food catering places and whatnot, when those same fire units could be used for other purposes. I'm talking in my district here. We're on Shogwans, it's the same thing. Why are there fire trucks delivering water to these institutions? And is there not a coordination with WASA and to deliver water to these institutions on a daily basis? So much so, the fire trucks are very heavy units. The pavement going leading to the Freeport in the school, right? The manhole covers are damaged because as a result of fire officer, a fire truck have to go on top the pavement there to give water to people where the lighter trucks could have given water to these establishments. Thank you very much. I'll listen off here. It's
all
not
right.
Your fault, an officer. It's square pegs in round hole again. And you could come on the radio station and preach how much with respect to fire officers. We know what you all go through. But again, management. We have a serious management problem. Whether it be fire services, the police service, wherever this cooperation is, the same square pegs in wrong hole. Thank you.
Hmm.
I just want to say thank you for your comments and the fact that you do recognize the challenges that we face.
Yeah, that's
and
it. So,
and I had to give hats off to your caller for at least identifying the problem and still trying to find the solution within the same statement.
Indeed, so.
But do you have any more callers?
Yes. Hello, good afternoon.
Maybe, sorry about that.
That's okay.
Right, I totally defer. Listen, when people not in, I'm in agreement with the fire officer and the fire station, delivering water to the police station is essential service. And if water takes long, they are just aware a phone call away with collaboration. I see nothing wrong with that.
Mm.
Now, here's my thing, eh? And I'm glad you're on the program,
Officer
Jude.
Because
you see, farmers, it's not a lot fed up at them. During the flood, during the rainy season, take care of them with flood. During the dry season, some of them set fire to their own place to control whatever debris around the thing. And something I want you to raise. Down the islands, where they're farming, do your research as to whether or not down the other islands, do we have this demand for the fire services to out fire in relation to farmers here? And not only that, what do you recommend for farmers, you mentioned it just now, as prerequisites for data even control fire in their own property? I want to get your feedback on that. Thank you very much. You're doing a very good job.
I'll tell you something.
I love that the fact that you're on the program today to let people know that sometimes they too have to put things in place to take care of themselves. Thank you very much.
Interesting.
That's absolutely right, DV. When we look at disaster preparedness, and this is what the fire service is called upon to do again. Ladies and gentlemen, the responsibility of the Trinity Tobago Fire Service as your fire service. This is your fire service. We're here to serve you. Is to first and foremost provide protection for your properties and for your life. Your number one priority is to protect your life. Secondly, to protect your property against fire and other hazards, other dangers. And thirdly, the part where we're dropping water for the different institutions is to provide humanitarian service.
Wow.
And so even the police, even the court, because think about it, somebody has a court date, right? And because the court doesn't have any water, we have to shut down the court.
Yep.
I mean, the fire service can provide a tank or two of water so that the members of the public don't have to come and be disadvantaged as a result of a lack of water in the government institutions.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
we in the fire service prioritize these institutions. And yes, sometimes because of the weight of the trucks and all these other things, you're going to have challenges. We have to use our discretion. We have to be wise about how we replace the fire trucks and all of these things. All of these things that they train you to do, all right? And we this is why an officer or a senior officer is the one that would be in charge of an appliance, so that a junior officer would take instructions from somebody who is wiser, who has spent more years in the service, and who has interacted and gained from his own experience.
Well said.
So again, I'm very proud to be a fire officer. I've been in the fire service for 20 years, going on my 21st year. By God's grace, I intend to complete my tenure here and to be of value and service to my country. So
right.
I want if we have any other calls, I'm glad to have the calls this afternoon.
Hello. I am so glad to get back. You know, Mr. Davey,
yes, sir.
You know, you are a straightforward fellow, right? In terms of a balanced fellow, one of the few balanced fellows you have in the program.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're here, now I make my contribution because I know what I'm talking about. I'm not talking by guess. You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm,
and when I say square pegs and round holes,
you're correct.
Gentlemen, because he is a political affiliation, I know business about no political party, you know. I never had no concern about no political
no,
party.
No, no, no. He agreed, you know. He agreed.
Square pegs and round holes. Why can't we have an efficient, none of the islands? Yeah, let me tell you something. You talk about down the island. I have been all right through on the island, and especially the landmass too. You would not find a fire services truck going to distribute water for no police station on the island. Whether it be Grenada, go back to St. Vincent, Antigua, Dominica, none of them places. He talking rubbish. He don't know what he's talking about. Because I am affiliated every one of the islands. I'm talking about what I know about. I'm not from Guyana, so I don't know. I know about Jamaica up to the 1994. I know about Jamaica. After that, I don't know much about it. When coming to that, he's talking rubbish in terms of when coming to them kind of thing. And the next thing, our landmass is totally different from none of the small of the islands. Right? Fire is not as abundant in terms of because it's a different type of farming. Not slash and burn. We have a large landmass where we had sugarcane, and that's where you find...
Yeah, but hear what you're saying. Hear what you're saying.
Landmass overgrown grass, right. And you have that kind
all
of
right.
scenario.
In all fairness...
Again,
no, hold
I
on.
I don't have no defense about nobody, whether who it is. He has a political defense to make where this thing. And, sir, with respect to fire services, humanitarian reason, I am still saying you're not supposed, in a rare occasion, let WASA get the act together and let them truck burn water to the police station, food caterers, and everybody else down the road. Thank you again and have a good evening.
All right. Now, caller, I want to tell you thank you very much for sharing, because on this program, one thing I allow you to do is speak your mind and, you know, with a respectful, in a respectable manner, which you did. You didn't disrespect or anything. But I can't see where you were saying that Officer Jude Rogers has political affiliations or aspirations, why he was expressing...
No, he was speaking about me. He was speaking about the caller.
Oh, the other caller? Oh, because I'm listening. Oh, okay. Well, I apologize. I thought it was you because I'm thinking, you know. Now, the other islands, you may be right. Them things will happen. But I could still understand the fire services somewhat by doing this. Because let me tell you something. Eh? Officer Rogers just mentioned something to me that I didn't even think about. When the courts don't have water, they go and shut down, you know. And as your case is getting pushed back, they look for every inclination of an excuse to drag on the judiciary. Drag it on and perpetuate foolishness and rubbish. So let me get them water as an excuse now. Because if they go in the toilet and the seat dirty, oh God, we are not shut down the court because we in humane conditions here, the man should get pee properly. Let me be real. So if Officer Rogers is saying that we had to prioritize as the fire services department in Trinidad and Tobago, which is your fire services to do this, I say big up the whole fire department. Let me take our next call, Rogers, or you have something you want to say?
Yeah, well, if we have the call, we'll take the
we
call.
We have calls. Right now, you blazing fire right now. You're hot, boy. It's a hot item. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. I find the program getting fiery hot, man. I need to cool it down a little bit. So I want to give the officer a question. Officer, every time I go wash my car, you know, I wash in the car with my hose and thing, right? I have a neighbor. She will come on and tell me how she feeling hot, hot, hot like fire. What do you think? I should take my hose and wet she down?
Roll.
Later.
Brother, how you just come with some kind of unorthodox kind of the man talking about? As a matter of fact, I'm glad you mentioned the hose thing. I'm glad you mentioned that because
I'm absolutely glad
yes.
that you mentioned it.
No, before
I have something.
That's right. And I don't want you talking it yet. because I wanted to bring that back in the next hour because we had a break for the news just now. And that whole thing going to take a little while to explain. So let me take a couple calls before the top now. Hello, good afternoon.
Thanks again for getting in. Davey, I would not attack nobody.
No. I know that.
You know what I'm saying? And what I am saying, I am a follower of your program.
Yes.
Other programs. And I kind of have a problem when people come to defend, you know what I'm saying, things that when other callers call and highlight things, I don't talk off the guests and off things, and I did not attack the fire officer at no time. They do a humongous work, right? People don't understand, especially in times of fire and whatnot. And I would like to tell the fire officer too, we need some more fire officers going on specialty training.
Yes.
I can tell you for sure, in terms of where earthquakes are concerned,
yes,
you all are inadequately, right? Inadequately, where equipment and things are concerned. And the ODPM, instead of diverting that amount of money to ODPM, it would better be served to the fire services. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
All right. Same to you, buddy. And I agree with him. I agree with him. Because, I mean, I don't know how the BA is in your department, how it's functioning, but I have had persons to tell me that, you know, those things are not working properly, you know. So I understand him. I mean, when it comes to security and safety in this country, I told you all once before, and I'll say it again, the fire services, the firemen, and Jude, you included, you all are the Batman and Superman of the world, you know. People might think the police officers are the ones who they... Police, you see the fire services? I promise all your story. Jude, I'm going to share the story with you because we have about a minute and something out for the news. I'm going to share the story with all you real quick. I remember that show I tell you I was filming back in 2011 called Jobs. I had the opportunity of coming into the fire services and go behind the scenes a day. Kind of under the shelf now because you know it's real rated to come inside. Anyway, there was an RTA outside and one fire officer was in the john and he missed the truck. I remember we jump in the car. We carry the officer to the location of the accident. And the officer in charge of the watch said, you know, it's a good thing you got here. So I was asking around, you know, what would have happened? He could have been dismissed or severely disciplined if he did not make it on that RTA. Because every officer, he could have been one man short that could have saved a life.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wasn't on the truck in the specific time frame, and all they don't understand, you know, the time frame, you know, that them when that bell go, they might be on that truck and all. They don't understand. We ain't get to all that part of the programming as yet.
30 seconds in the day, no matter what part of the station you're in.
Exactly.
60 seconds in the night.
30 seconds in the day and 60 in the night. All you understand that when that bell ring is on that truck, you're assigned to a truck, don't miss it. Don't miss it.
We have a joke in the fire. So we say, if you're in the washroom, in the toilet, you cut it.
Yeah, well, that is what you have to do. That is what you have to do. That is what you have to do. People, all your trained. I just say that, all your trained. I in the toilet there, and that happened. Crapo smoke my bike. Pressure for me to come out there. All your trained. And I want to talk about a situation that happened with Karani. But when we come back after the news, we have Officer Jude Rogers. Today is going to be a brilliant day in the world of fire services. Stick around. Yes, Freedom will continue after this.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
6 minutes after the hour, 5 o'clock. Welcome back to The Overdrive, the most electrifying, entertaining show on radio. That's right. And I have the privilege of being in your company. I'm Davey, alongside my good brethren, Fire Officer Jude Rogers. Jude, are you there?
I am here, live and alive.
Trinity to the bone, boy.
Yeah.
Trinity to the bone, boy, Jude, boy. Trinity to the bone.
Yes. I love my country. Trust me.
Well, boy, you ain't love it now. But if you did say you ain't love your country, I say fire you. You know, the country pain, you know, are we talking about? But
yeah, definitely Trinity to the bone.
On the story of the firemen and superheroes in this world, if you ever look at the situation that happened in 9/11, you would have seen police officers, this one, everybody rushing. Coming out of 9/11 is when the recognition went on the different fire departments out there in the U.S. No, everybody, police officers, everybody came on the ground, was doing things. But then they started to look at the firemen. Then the big fires in California and these other bushfires taken raging across the U.S. last year. Police was there to maintain law and order. But it's the fire officer that is going to rush into that burning building, that inferno, with that smoke and smog. to bring out your child, you know, or a pet, you know. Let me give all you a story why I tell you guys that fire officers, and a matter of fact, no disrespect, no police, no fire officer, and say that there's out of fire. Anytime you tell a fire officer that he is out fire, he going at stoops. Because the correct terminology for fire officers when they're dealing with fires, they extinguish blazes.
That is correct.
A fire officer extinguish a blaze. They don't out fires. So let me politically correct. Now here the next thing that make me know that the fire officers are the Batmans and Supermans of this world. In Karani there was an RTA, which is a road traffic accident that took place. And a car went down in the Karani River, partially submerged. And while the vehicle was in there, the lone driver, the driver who apparently was the lone occupant of the vehicle, but the time we didn't know, she came out of the car. People rescue her. And she was bawling and screaming, "My baby, my child, my baby, the baby." Fire officers looked in the vehicle and saw a car seat in the back. Do you know who went down in that murky water, alligator infested, to find this baby? The fire officers, for 45 minutes, they frantically searched that river because this woman was in a mess at the side of the highway bawling for her child. The baby, the baby, the baby. Only to realize via a phone call, or their social media, somebody see it and call. And the family tried to get her. Her phone was ringing at the side of the road. Somebody pick it up. "Who phone is this?" And they answered and say, they say, "Well, do you know the person?" And she was in a deranged state. And they say, "Well, we're looking for the baby." All you know what happened to that child? That child was by the babysitter safe, you know. That child was dropped off by the babysitter safe. But this woman got so deranged and delusional upon impact and this accident that all she studied was her child and the lives of could be about 15 officers or more. The men, I couldn't count, I'd be lying, could be 9. But these fire officers risk their own lives for an infant that never existed in the car. But the car seat and the screams of that woman, it would have been remiss of these men to not do what they are trained to do, save lives. Police do not train to save your life. These men are trained to save lives. So when you think a fire officer is just an officer to come and only put it out of fire, I wanted to highlight that today because I promised myself that once we get this fire program going weekly, we would bring those things to the fore.
Yeah. Davey, you are so absolutely correct.
Thank you.
But I still want to extend a hand to my fellow
of course.
Police officers.
Of course.
And
of course.
I'll tell you why. And I'm going to give you a bit of history here. The Trinidad and Tobago Fire Service was once part of the Trinidad and Tobago Police Service.
Well, boy.
Back in 1951, we separated and went our separate ways. But the commissioner of police was once the commissioner of fire.
Wow.
And that is what the way it was about. We have come many years and we've seen it fit to separate the two services into specialist units. This is why our uniforms are so closely mirrored. If you look at the gray shirt and
yes.
the same color pants,
yes.
the only difference is the red epaulette on the shoulder and the color of the belt being from black or brown, with the fire officers being black and the police officers' belt being brown.
Being brown, yes.
But other than that, there is very little distinction between the two uniforms. And of course, our lanyard would be red and the police service lanyard would be black. We wear our rank marking on our shoulders, whereas they wear their rank marking on their arms.
Yeah.
So there's very little difference. And so the camaraderie between police and fire, and I will say this clearly, when we are on an accident or RTA, the first persons that we call for are the police service, because we still need somebody looking over our backs
while
we are tending to the persons who need to be extricated from these accidents.
Well said.
So I want to say to you, and I want to say to that, as you begin fire up, I will big up the police.
No, well,
because
at the end of the day,
we work together.
Watch, man. The police coming in Thursday for their big ups, or no? I know. Every Tuesday, I have a police on you, so them coming for the big ups. Yeah.
Two things I want to touch on.
Tell me.
I want to touch the fire hose, the hose, washing the car with the hose.
Yes, let's talk about that. Yes.
And I want to touch a little bit on the 9/11 factor that you talked about. So let me touch the hose first.
Yes.
So ladies and gentlemen who are in my listening right now, I want to be aware. I started issuing that little warning and that little notice. So turn off the tap when you're washing the wares now. Full a basement bed. Full a bucket of water and let's wash the car with a bucket of water rather than have the hose just running, or even use the type of control on the hose where if you squeeze, water comes out. When you release the hose,
it locks up. It locks up, yeah.
Because I will tell you this. You need to visit, if you ever had a chance to visit the Wassa reservoirs, the various reservoirs that we have in the country, and you see the water levels at certain times. I know we've gotten a lot of rainfall within the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you, all you want is one good dry season, and all that water that was in the reservoir going to be eradicated.
Wow.
Now, we already have challenges of having leakages in the lines. And especially if you're in your homes, I'm asking you, if you have a leaking tap in your home, that's another way that water wastes easily. Turn off the tap. Change the tap so that it doesn't give that drip. And we all know everybody who also have a one tap would just remain dripping right through. We all know that.
Hey, Brad, my house got that.
People, I'm admonishing you right now. If you know you have faulty electrical wiring in any aspect of your home,
mm-hmm.
you're running electrical cords, and you are using those electrical cords as a permanent supply of electricity for appliances, such as your refrigerator, such as water heaters, and so forth, please desist from that practice. Please desist from using extension cords as permanent sources of electricity for your appliances. It will break down with time, one, and the resistivity on those lines are going to be, you're going to build up resistivity. Heat is going to be a factor, and eventually, once you're in close proximity to a combustible material, you're going to have the start of a fire. And ladies and gentlemen, at no point in time in our current situation where we've been through a pandemic, where we've lost so much ground as a country, as a nation, as a Caribbean region, do you want to have a loss of home at this stage?
True.
Especially those homes which have wooden roofs and wooden ceilings, you are more susceptible. You are in a higher degree of risk than others versus the neighbor or who may have a gypsum or a metal roof. I'm also advising the PVC ceiling may look very beautiful, but it is not the best methodology. It's not the best material for an area that you want to create what we call to be fire resistant. I would use that in a gallery. I would use that outdoors in the shed outside, but I would not use it inside my home because I want something that will contain the fire in the room and not aid with the fire spread throughout my home.
Mm-hmm,
so I touch on a myriad of topics there,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and I do know somebody may be on the line. If they're not, and I'll talk about the 9/11 part.
Let's go to the 9/11. But remember those numbers to call us on. We had some calls earlier, but I didn't want to interrupt. Let's take it quick. Hello, good afternoon.
Hey, everybody.
What's up, buddy?
You know, beside the water, you know, I don't be driving around. Sometimes I electricity use. Some people just have on lights on. I don't even know necessarily. You know, sometimes you have a little outside, but sometimes have lights on unnecessarily too. I know that also put a pull on the whole power grid as well, unnecessary lighting. I don't know where you're saying the people. I bought one of these things that pull. I have one. So, you know, sometimes you're doing something, I don't need the water right you. I don't know, but you know, due to the fact that how water is, the price we just pay for water in China, you know, we don't pay attention to that. And I know, well, if you observe, when you buy any appliance, you observe they have the kilowatt on the stock on date. But you know, that don't mean anything to us in America and these states without to pay for everything. That means so much if something using at $5 less a year, people go for it. You know?
Yeah.
People
that's right.
sell things just for that little money, what we consider little money. But you tell us, you know, it doesn't matter to us yet. Doctor, listen,
right? All right, cool. 627-3223, 625-2257, or you can send your WhatsApp to 306-1065. Let's get to the 9/11 story.
Right. So, ladies and gentlemen, those who are listening, I want to paint a picture for you of what 9/11 meant. When 9/11 occurred, I was not part of the Trinity Fire Service. I was observing that on television, to my horror.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said to myself, if I am to join one of the services in Trinidad and Tobago, I wanted to join the fire service because I felt as though that is the job that I felt would be, I would be able to give back to my country and to really make an impact.
Wow.
And so that those were some of the, I would say, some of the things that encouraged me to enter the fire service. All right. So ladies and gentlemen, just taking a look at it from a snapshot. Could you imagine getting a call that there is a building that is on fire, 100 stories, and persons are trapped, and your job is to rescue those persons? Think about what you, when you leave home, you know, every day when a fire officer leaves home, and possibly even police officers, we know there's a possibility that you may not return.
Mm-hmm.
That it sort of is at the back of your mind, but you don't really think about it.
Wow.
But it's there, and you know it. You know it. Because fire officers have left, and I mean, we may not have many instances that you know of, but there, I would always remind persons of the Camp Omega incident where fire officers left to go, Davy. This is the one that makes my heart, well, it makes my paws raise, because I actually know survivors of this incident that I'm going to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a bushfire, and if you know, there are bunkers littering all of Shagaramas.
Yes.
Where there are munition and ammunition are stored and explosives are stored. And in this particular case, there was a leakage from one of those bunkers. Liquid. Mm. I don't know what type of liquid, which is whether it's a nitrous oxide. I don't know what it was. Nitro, you know. And the bushfire fed all the way up to the bunker until it reached the liquid and it ignited.
Wow.
The ricochet of that blast, the fire truck wasn't even directly near to the blast, but the truck was thrown back. Some officers lost their lives. And I know of an officer who, if he ended up becoming a safety officer when he retired, because he felt so important. It's so important to tell the story of safety, because safety, health and safety, is the one lesson that is written in blood. The way you learn health and safety in the old time days, if somebody had to die for you to know that you could be electrocuted, somebody had to fall and die for you to know. Similarly, in this particular instance, Trinidad and Tobago lost fire officers that day. They were heroes because they went there to fight a bushfire. So when you think you're just going to fight an ordinary bushfire, I don't know what you have in the bush. I don't know what people storing in the bush. I don't know what people storing up in their homes too. Because if you don't put on that BA set,
wow,
and you enter a home, and you just tell yourself it's toxic, it's just ordinary smoke. It's not ordinary smoke. Sometimes people have meth labs in their homes. They have all sorts of chemicals being stored. And these things have an effect on the lives of officers after they leave the fire service and retire.
Wow.
And so my heart goes out to those members, because I want to say this to the members of the public. Yes, you may label fire officers as heroes and so forth. And yes, we wear that. And we wear that without even batting an eye, no thinking twice about it. And whether you call us heroes or you don't call us heroes, we still want to do the job that we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But think about it. We belong to a family. Somebody's daddy, somebody's mommy, somebody's daughter, somebody's son, somebody's cousin, somebody's nephew is a fire officer. And we are members of society too. And so each and every one of us bear the burden. So we just like you, we could be affected by a fire as well too. I know of fire officers whose homes have also burnt, because we live with families, and you may be as careful as you think. There is the unguarded moment. So for 9/11, Davy, I can tell you what was the most eerie thing about it is to hear the sirens going off on all of the chirps. There is a sort of a chirp that is given off by the life support that we carry on each BA set.
Mm.
There is an alarm that goes off when a fire officer is down for a certain amount of time. That alarm begins to chirp, Davy. And that is so that we can find the fire officer wherever he may be or she may be trapped in the building. And it's to hear those chirps going off for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours until the batteries started to die.
Oh my God.
And there were even some chirps that were heard days after, I don't know how the batteries lasted so long, until all the chips faded away. 300 plus fire officers lost their lives in 9/11. But it is just to tell us that the possibility is you can go to work one day, Davey, but you may not go back home. That's the reality of what you face.
Wow. You know, hold on, eh? Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Davey, to you and to the officer and to your entire host and audience there at 106.5 FM.
Thank you.
The story just given threw me back a bit. If he hadn't said that about that blast, I would not have remembered this. It would have happened in the year 1970. I would have been 9 years old living in East Dry River on Lodge Place, overlooking Piccadilly Street and the entire city. I could have stayed from in my yard and see straight down Prince Street into Woodford Square.
Mm-hmm.
And when there was the Black Power riots, the fire services had to come out. And there was a fireman who used to live in the area called Rosell, and he was off duty that day. A young fella, his first name was Keith. I don't remember his surname.
Mm.
But he, on top of the cliff overlooking Piccadilly Street, seeing what going on and firemen and things, he left home and went down there to help his comrades because they're very dedicated. And you know what happened to him? A hand grenade was thrown on his lap in the fire brigade. I don't know if this officer here would know about it. I was 9 years old at the time in 1970, and a hand grenade was thrown on his lap, and he died. His name was Keats. I'd never forget that.
Wow.
So it's really a risky job, and I believe that fire officers tend to be some of the most dedicated to duty at the end of the day. Thank you.
Mm. Thank you very much. You know, bye. When you hear stories like what Officer Rogers just tell us, you'd wonder, you know, you're calling to talk about fires and we talk about bushfires and the dangers of this and that. But sometimes we need to really sit down and meditate on some of these stories that Officer Rogers just painted there. We talk about 9/11, but listen to what he talked about with that alarming device. So for us, we may not know what it means. We may not know. But Jude is saying, I heard it, and you're hearing it. And not only him alone, officers across the world who are passionate about the job. Because I think becoming a fire officer, tell all here, they put out an ad, they're looking for 160 officers, they get 500 people applying. By the time the first training comes, they're down to 300. 200 gone. By the time the second phase done, another 100 gone. By the time they finish, they're going to get the 160 that they want to know. They might get one less, might get 159. Because their first two segments or three segments you had to go through to become a TTFS is so stringent and serious that if you're not, it's not for the faint of heart. I'll tell you that much. It's not, you know, and you might quicker get you being a police officer. You might get you there faster than you being a fireman. I'm telling you, it's not easy. So whenever I see these fire officers, you know, it's kudos and hats off to all servicemen that risk their lives. Because I come to work here on radio when the day come, and my job is not one when I leave. When I come to work, it's risky. What's the biggest risk I face when I get in the building? Is that somebody running here and shoot up the place, or I get knocked down outside? You know, again, the job is not risky, but becoming a fire officer, it's a daily thing in the back of your mind. That and police officers. That you go to work, police officers and firemen, you go to work, and there is a very slim chance of you not returning.
Sure.
And if you do return, could be in a deformed, damaged state. You know, one police officer I know went to work, and today he's still on disability. He was shot in the line of duty. He didn't die, but he was severely injured. You know, his ability to walk has gone. Spinal injuries. Bullet lodging him, they couldn't even take it out. Because to remove it, they thought it would have damaged his, but better to take it out because his spine damaged anyway.
Yeah.
You know? So I understand the dangers. But what I want to say to you as a fire officer, though, you know, you said fire officers' houses burned down as well. But I would think that, you know, you live with a fire officer. All you look like all your real stricter. you come home and you see your children doing some kind of nonsense there, you go down and hit the roof, because you know what that could cause.
You know the danger.
You know. So I say, I mean.
Let me paint another picture. If you're living in a rental property with multiple persons, you know, one person, there's a lesson for everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, sometimes you see an ill taking place and you overlook it. You know, you're overlooking your own demise.
That's true. I'm going to take this call. That's true.
It's happening in Trinidad and Tobago all the time, Davey.
Because you say, nine of my business.
Because that's embodying, that you know, skin off of my back.
Yeah.
But if your neighbor doing something, I know of many different fire investigations that have gone on where one member of the apartment building was doing something risky. Do you know that the other members of that apartment are aware of the risky behavior of that one person?
And
why
nothing.
Would you not say something? So the fact of the matter is, if each of you were to stand up, and this is where we have strength in numbers, ladies and gentlemen, and somebody has to have the wherewithal to say enough is enough. Let us take a stand. And I would dare to say this to you people. In this rounds, you know, everybody, crime is the biggest issue. And I must say that crime is a major issue. You can tactfully deal with situations. You don't have to curse. You don't have to carry on. You don't have to threaten persons to get people to know that you're serious about something. There are other ways and means of getting your message across and taking a stand. And I want to implore members of the public, do not confront people sometimes when you do. But if you know that someone is in breach of the Agricultural Fires Act, your neighbor burning rubbish and you know your neighbor don't have a permit, did not burn in a barrel, and the possibility is it could go beyond their fence line, report this to the fire service, the near fire service.
Hello, good.
If you can take a little video, I not tell you to go and risk your life and let your neighbor see if video is taping them. But take a little video, because everybody have a little camera, a little video camera or something.
And send it out.
And give us the information. We will act on it.
Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Hi, Dave.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi. See your call. David, this is Terry.
Hi.
Here it is. I want to give a contribution concerning the dangers of lighting a fire and leaving it, thinking that it is so small, or, you know, it's not so important to stick around and watch it until it's finished and then go. Because it had an incident here where my whole house could have burned down. And it so happened that God had to be with me that day when I dropped my 3-year-old, 4-year-old son to preschool. And it so happened that I end up coming home normally. I might drop in the grocery or, you know, pick up something by the marketplace or something and reach home a little late. But I came home right after, and would you believe, just drinking a cup of tea in my living room, and I just hear a little cackle, 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 and made me get up. If I didn't get up, Davey and Mr. Jude, and watch by my window, I wouldn't have seen fire starting to blaze. And that is nearby, place the fire, the rubbish was left burning.
Wow.
And would you believe, I alone home, by the time I just called the fire service, and it was like, I heard last week, I heard you all said that you all never saw that fire burnt wrong as yet or the dot. Would you believe, I will tell you today that I had PVC under the dot, and the fire burned the dot to reach the PVC, preventing me from running a hose so fast to get that same water from that PVC to all the fire coming through the wire over between me and the neighbor.
Wow.
Yeah,
that is
true. And all the ashes, everything. I just going a little further to tell you all that the ashes, I had a couch, a couch in the garage. My car was in the garage also. And the ashes was falling so much in blocks already on top of the couch. I actually saw it burned. And when I couldn't get help, I went to a neighbor. He said, the neighbor said he had a pot on the fire. He have a pot on the fire. Next one say, he closed the window. And then I telling you, I went further down to another neighbor, and he who brought in a hose. and try to help me while I nearly pushed down my tank to throw down water to get that fire out on my side too, because it was just spreading to even to the other side of the neighbor place.
Wow.
The Ridgey bushes. When I couldn't do anything else, I just tipped my car out of the garage and I just see what I could do. And thank God, well, the fire service came, but it was out already. But they still came there, and you know, they saw everything. And I telling you, people, do not leave a fire burning. Please do not leave a fire with rubbish and think that it's unimportant. Because let me tell you, today I wouldn't have had a house, car, nothing.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing.
Big Color is so absolutely correct. Bushfire season is a season where you cannot take those chances. I want to say one quick thing. The statistics have pointed us to the fact that between February to May are the driest months of the year, generally speaking, and those are the months that you have to be so
vigilant,
much on guard, right? Also, that caller was very much on point. You cannot leave a bushfire unattended, even if you're burning rubbish in your backyard, and that unguarded moment you step inside to take a phone call or come back out, and then something can escalate. You have to contain that fire within a particular zone where there are no combustibles. If you're burning in a barrel, fine, burn only in the barrel. If you're burning in a heap, you have to clear around that heap at least 5 to 6 feet around that heap of all other vegetation and all other combustibles. So it cannot jump that 5 or 6 feet and burn something else on the side. Again, ladies and gentlemen, to burn outdoors, you need to have a fire permit between December 1 to June the 30th. You must make an application at your fire station, your nearest fire station, in writing, indicating the location that you want to burn, the time that you want to burn, what is the purpose of what you're burning. And we will then send the fire guardians out to your location, who will identify all of the hazards and say what are the necessary precautions. And then and only then, we would then issue you that fire permit for a specific period, be it a week, 5 days, 1 day, 2 days, and for a specific time during the day, not for the entire day, between 5 to 7 in the evening or early at morning. That is the period of time. And you must watch that fire. And it cannot be you alone watching. You have more than one attendant. Those are the criteria with which you can obtain a fire permit.
And I like the way you put it. That fire permit is just to burn in that particular... You ain't get a fire permit for Trin City where you're going down... and you're going in Diego Martin burning. And when the police catch you, you say, I have a permit.
Last but not least, the fine.
There is
a jail time of 6 months and $20,000 if found to be in breach of the Agriculture Fires Act. They have stepped up this from $1,500 and 3 months to 6 months. And $20,000. Hence, see how serious this particular situation has become. All right?
Now,
so, any fire officer, any fire guardian, any police officer, any person upholding the law can address this situation. And once you know the law, you can address this. Any forest officer, any officer who is assigned to the Ministry of Forestry Division. Has the onus and the responsibility to enter somebody's property and to make the necessary interjection for you to cease and desist from any activity which is illegal during the bushfire season.
Now, once again, let's talk about, before you depart, what can cause a bushfire? Somebody now messaged me and said, I missed that last week. What causes a bushfire?
All right, so bushfire, obviously, because of the dryness of the particular period and the vegetation being dry, it becomes very easy to ignite. Very simply put, any source of ignition, any heat source, let me start off with matches, a cigarette butt that is still smoldering can't ignite dry leaves and shrubs and bushes. Broken glass, when in proximity with the sunlight, can act as a magnifying glass and also heat up the particular material underneath the glass during the hot sun periods. Then we have willful raising of fire for the purpose of clearing land, for the purpose of arson, for the purpose of committing crime, for the purpose of burning to get whatever it is, whether it's copper, whether it's tire, you're trying to get rid of a tree that's bugging you. And these are the sources of fires. These are the sources of ignition that take place all the time. Mm. Members of the public know that so many different times they could burn. But if you're going to burn, take the time and do the right thing. It will pay off for you in the long run. Take the time and do the right thing.
And,
right?
I'm so happy that you said that, because people have a way to do shortcut, you know.
All the time.
Somebody says, but can you please help me? I know DJ. Okay. Right. So the thing is, when it comes down to the bushfire, we understand comprehensively from last week into this week the dangers that it poses.
Yeah.
The threat to life and property. You might say, me ain't bound to dead with that. You could die. One last thing I want you to do is help me to help them again. You said it last week, and I want it to sink in. Somebody could die from a fire,
mm-hmm.
but indirectly, that you caused.
Yes.
And I want you to bring back those points again, because I found it so interesting and valuable. So persons can understand, if you feel a study fire, nobody ain't get burned up. The woman with asthma down the street, who mm-hmm. bedridden.
Person who just had surgery,
mm-hmm.
right? Person who has the ability, who has asthma attack, who has problem breathing, bronchitis. Persons who may have had COVID, because COVID is a respiratory disease mm-hmm. or respiratory illness. And those who are having difficulty breathing, children, babies, mothers, nursing mothers, all of these persons have the acute, they have the difficulty with smoke and inhalation issues. And especially ageable persons who are bedridden and are unable to leave the proximity. Because one thing, you can jump in your car and drive away and go and stay in an area that doesn't have smoke. But when you are bedridden, somebody has a stroke, somebody suffering from something that caused them to be immobile. They got a stroke. They're bedridden. They can't move. That person can't remove themselves from that nauseating smoke, you know. They stay right there. They suffocate. They get low oxygen. And eventually that person succumbs. Yeah?
Wow.
Because some bushfires may have tires in them. They may have old rubbish. And it's a toxic smoke you're giving off. It's a toxic byproduct. It's not just a bushfire, as we call it.
Mm.
All right, but the person up the hill who light the fire, who looking at the fire go down the road, it's okay with them, you know.
That is the point.
But the person who down the hill, downwind of the fire, they bear the brunt of the effluence, the fallout, and that is what we're trying to avoid. But ladies and gentlemen, Trinidad and Tobago is still a good place.
Yeah,
I still believe that there are good citizens among us. We must be our brother's keeper. The change that is needed in our nation begins with me. It begins with you. You can make a difference. I can make a difference. Let's start with you. So, ladies and gentlemen,
that's it. Well
on
said.
Behalf of myself, the Chief Fire Officer of Sir Bristow, and the serving members of the executive and all fire officers throughout Trinidad and Tobago, whether you are retired, whether you are an existing member, whether you are an auxiliary. Davey, we have auxiliary fire officers.
Watch me. I want to be one, you know. I don't know if I can still get through, by.
Yes, you come and sign up Tuesday, Thursday. Go to the fire station and sign up to be an auxiliary officer.
I want to be
called out as a voluntary in the event of an emergency.
Yeah.
They serve our nation as well. Let's not forget them. And even our support staff, the members and of our supports, have our clerical staff. They have to prepare your documents.
Mm-hmm.
They have to prepare the permits,
mm-hmm.
the accounting
mm-hmm.
staff, the mechanics, the cleaners, mm-hmm. all of these persons are human beings too. So I implore each and every one of you, think about the humanitarian side of everything that we do. Think about how we can impact positively in our nation by just watching out and being your brother's keeper. Let's change the environment and the tide of the environment and save our country from burning. Be your brother's keeper. Thank you very much, Davey.
Thank you very much, Officer Jude. Until next week. Thank you.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.